Our case for argument today is 21-2203, Blix v. Apple. Please proceed. Which person are you?
Your Honor, I am Thomas Burt. I was given to understand by the clerk immediately before this panel took the bench that though we had agreed to split argument, that argument will not be heard on the patent-specific issues, and rather all the argument time will be given for the antitrust issues.
That's correct, but for one procedural question. Judge Cunningham, the floor is yours.
Okay, yes. Do you agree that for the patent infringement claims, you are not appealing the district court's November 2020 order regarding the dismissal of Claim 17?
I think the decisions all addressed invalidity, 101. So I think we're appealing the entire 101 issue. I don't think the court reached non-infringement. Did I misunderstand your question?
Just looking at your notice of appeal, for example, you did not identify the order that related to Claim 17. So my understanding is you are not appealing that particular order that relates to dismissal of Claim 17 on 101.
I think that's right. I think Claim 17 is not being appealed.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Burt, please proceed.
Good afternoon, may it please the court. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for...
Hold on a sec. You've got to give him 15 minutes.
Your Honor, for purposes of these proceedings, Apple has conceded that it has a monopoly in the mobile OS market. And so we turn next to the conduct.
And just so I understand, when you say mobile OS market, you're talking about the operating system that runs on these Apple iPhones.
That is correct, Your Honor. And just so that there's no misunderstanding.
And to be further clear, when it comes to your claim that they are illegally maintaining or preserving or protecting their monopoly, the monopoly that you are claiming is the operating system.
Yes,
itself.
Your Honor.
Just like the Microsoft case from 20 years ago, where Microsoft was found to be illegally protecting its Windows operating system.
Yes, that is the argument, Your Honor.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure it wasn't something broader, looser, like the app market or something called the Apple ecosystem. It's the operating system is the targeted monopoly.
That's right. And okay. I expect, as we discuss this, Your Honor, I'm going to refer sometimes to the Apple ecosystem because the Apple's market power in mobile OS gives it the ability to determine what is in and out of the app ecosystem and which apps can sell through the App Store and all that. But when we say that they are protecting by exclusionary conduct their monopoly, we mean the monopoly and operating system. So what Blix alleges that Apple did is four things. Use its monopoly to force Blix to allow Apple access to its technology.
This is the Sherlocking argument.
This is the Sherlocking argument. That it took that technology, copied it.
And do I understand your argument to be that the district court judge erred to the extent that he believed the Sherlocking argument was contingent upon the patent infringement claim, that Sherlocking has its own individual anti-competitive injury?
Precisely so, Your Honor. They have different analytical lenses, and they don't have the same elements, right? The fastest way I can put it, I think, is that anyone can infringe. A supplier can infringe.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you, and you're not going to like this, but for purposes of this argument, I need to learn and understand the antitrust concepts, and that, to me, is the hard part. I want you to assume, for purposes of your argument today, throughout, that there's no patent infringement because the patent is invalid. I'd like you to start from that assumption. It's not going to make you happy, but I still have reason to have lots of questions for you, regardless of whether there's patent infringement or not. So that's the way I want you to approach the argument. Is that okay?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. And that is precisely where I was going.
Okay.
If the Sherlocking is not dependent on the validity of the patent, if there's no patent, if there is a patent, but the patent is invalid and therefore there's no patent, the Sherlocking turns on a different analysis. The analysis is, and that's where I was going with anyone can infringe. Anyone can infringe. They don't have to be a competitor. They don't have to be a monopolist. What we allege is Sherlocking is inherently the act of a monopolist. Only a monopoly can Sherlock. And
can
whether
hold access to the platform while being able to reverse engineer whatever your app is and develop a competitive app so that that kind of thing. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, but the way Your Honor's phrased it, I agree with all that, but the way Your Honor's phrased it makes it really specific to exactly this. And I can envision something that I would call Sherlocking that happens, for example, in a manufacturing or pharmaceutical context too. But it means that using the monopoly to control access and require the turning over of the technology, whether it's patented or not, but require the turning over of the technology and then saying, okay, I'm going to now use this stuff and put it in the marketplace in a way that protects my monopoly. In other words, instead of expecting to have to defend my monopoly by continuing to have a better product, historical accident, better product efficiency, instead, I'm going to take this new thing that I've gotten hold of and I'm going to use it to say, the changes that come with technology, I'm going to get ahead of that.
So it's not just that they are committing an antitrust injury to Blix in the form of withholding your ability to launch and therefore eliminating your first mover advantage. Your argument includes that they're also doing it for the purpose of protecting their OS monopoly because they want people to have to log on through their SIWA because it allows them to maintain monopoly power and expand sort of their people's commitment to their operating system. It also, if I'm understanding it right, prohibits developer access to the client base, which again protects their monopoly.
Chief Judge Moore, yes. All of that I agree with, and this returns to Judge Chen, you picked up on Microsoft earlier.
Yeah, I'm trying to understand really the theory. I understand the theory of bad behavior by Apple, whether you call it Sherlocking or sandbagging or building a moat, whatever you want to call it. I understand that. Then I'm trying to understand how all of that relates back to protecting the maintenance of a monopoly in the operating system itself. And so what I couldn't tell from your briefing was whether your theory is everything that they're doing is in service of, at least in part, protecting Apple's operating system from rival operating systems, from competing against Apple's operating system.
Yes, Your Honor. If
and you know the things you were exploring with Chief Judge Moore about 40 seconds ago sounded like different kinds of possible monopolies other than the concern over the rise of rival operating systems.
Can you clarify?
Because right now I'm lost and I need to be clear if I'm going to go your way.
I think I can provide some clarity. The scenario that our pleading envisions is that if Apple were to allow a middleware to emerge like Java or Netscape in the Microsoft decision that flattened the difference between operating systems. There's another operating system currently on the competitive fringe that they managed to push down to 30-something percent in the United States that we all know. And potentially new entrants, right? They're protecting their operating system against that. That if the changes in technology, if the release of SSOs that they couldn't act as an intermediary in, caused it to be so easy for users to cross-platform that they can get to their streaming apps and their social media, all the other stuff that we log into these days, sort of without regard to what their operating system is, that competitive fringe comes roaring back and suddenly there's no more ability to drive a premium on the iPhone because their OS monopoly, they can derive their monopoly profits in other ways, right?
I understand you have an allegation, and I'm trying to understand, step through, how you get from the shenanigans, alleged shenanigans that are undertaken in this SSO market, and how that necessarily relates to ultimately protecting their operating system in the same way that Apple was trying to kill off Netscape in order to protect Windows.
And that's what we mean by the discussion of middleware that's similar to Microsoft.
I understand middleware. I understand flattening the differences between operating systems. I understand that language, but I don't understand how your SSO, your Blue Mail messaging app somehow is a vehicle to allow a rival operating system to rise up.
Sure, Your Honor, because the way that we, because an operating, nobody uses an operating system for the sake of using an operating system. Your Honor, people use operating systems because it allows them to use the applications they want to use, right? And increasingly what we do with these expensive computers in our pockets is that we use applications that once upon a time we used applications that existed on desktops, and now much of what we use these computers in our pockets for is to access things that require sign-ons. And we're working off of applications that the application is the environment we operate within, and we authenticate to them. If the difference now is between operating systems is that you've got an environment where your OS determines which apps you can interact with or how you interact with them. But the next generation is that largely your SSO is going to determine your interaction with the apps. It doesn't really matter what the OS is.
Okay, that's a lot of complexity. Can I ask a simpler question? Because I'll be honest, I didn't understand how that really answered your question. But, I mean, maybe it does and I just didn't understand it. I thought that, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but I thought that part of your allegation of how the shenanigans Judge Chen referred to really did protect Apple's monopoly in its OS was switching costs related. You know, that really, once people, you know, like me, I love it when my computer autofills. You know what? In the government, they don't let you do that because they don't want your password saved. But at home, I love autofill. I love when I open up an app and there, my username and password are there. I'm not going to stop using that app because it's easier. And so it's like part of the switching costs, the culture of getting people in the door, having your service, and then they're not going to stop because, you know, your service is part of the big bundle, right? And so is that part, am I understanding correctly that that's part of your argument about Apple's behavior and how it, at least at the 12B6 stage, causes anti-competitive monopolization for their operating system?
One, Chief Judge Moore, yes. Two, everywhere we say moat, we're talking about switching costs.
Switching costs of what, though? I'm sorry.
Are
you talking about from an OS to an OS, or are you talking from an SSO to an SSO? Because those are two different things.
Yes, they are, Your Honor. We mean from OS to OS. Here's what I mean.
Because I understand Chief Judge Moore's concern about once you're hooked into one SSO plan, why would you ever jump from one to the other? But that's not enough for your antitrust claim. You've got to explain to me why this connects all the way back to the underlying operating system.
If I have a family, excuse me, Judge, if I have a family of five and we've all got iPhones, the switching costs are, I may have a subscription of Bumble for $230 lifetime subscription. My kids are gamers. They may have spent $50 on this game, $50 on that game, downloadable content, and all the gameplay. And I may have social media apps with all of the saved messages that I have with my friend, all of those things, whether they are dollars or hours, all of those things are switching costs, not between SSOs. Your Honor, what we allege is that if my family of five decides that the next time we need to pick a new set of phones, we want to migrate to a different mobile operating system, we want to go get Google Android phones, but we have used sign-in with Apple, we will find that much of what we have authenticated and signed up for, not that we have to go through more work to preserve those relationships, but that we will not be able to do so by any means short of individually going to the software help desk and praying that they will let us authenticate. If, for example, I've used sign-on with Apple to
I got to get a few questions in here because I got a series of them for you here. Is signing with Apple a cross-platform SSO? You're going there with that argument right now, but I need to understand, is signing with Apple a cross-platform SSO?
No. It is an SSO. The problem is that it is not a cross-platform SSO.
So we say it in English. SIWA only works with Apple's operating system, not Android, and yours works with both, correct?
In practice, that is what we plead. Yes, no. Yes, Judge, Chief Judge Moore, that is what we plead.
Let her answer her question.
Is Blitz's messaging bridge currently an SSO? I thought in your materials you seemed to imply that it might be in the future, but not currently. I need to understand where it stands now.
Your Honor, the answer to that is that they have not rolled it out as a functioning SSO. They've rolled it out only as a mail proxy so far, and that is because of the sand in the gears allegations.
Now, in your operative complaint, do you allege that Apple took via Sherlocking, or if you want to use these moat allegations, any technology other than Blue Mail? Tell me, is that an accurate statement? I just want to make sure I understand your allegations in the operative complaint.
Your Honor, in the operative complaint, the allegation is they took the messaging bridge, which was embodied in Blue Mail, but which is also the technology that would make a Blix-based SSO work.
And then how does that sort of taking specifically affect the OS market? Can you just kind of explain that to me?
Taking that and making sure that it only goes out into the market in a way that does not foster cross-platform usage means that the OS is protected by high switching costs. If it were to go out into the market in a way that fostered cross-platform usage, it would lower switching costs. And I need to reserve what little time I have.
We'll restore your rebuttal.
Thank you.
Oh, did you have a question?
He looks perplexed.
He always looks that way. Go ahead. Come on, Mr. Perry.
Yeah. Let's just keep going.
Thank you, Chief Judge Moore. May it please the court. Judge Cunningham, Apple signing with Apple is a cross-platform SSO. The plaintiff pleaded that in paragraph 204 of the First Amendment complaint, which is at appendix 148 to 49. They deleted that allegation from the Second Amendment complaint, but it is no less true in the real world. Apple's sign-in with Apple works on Android, it works on iOS, it works on Windows, it works on Macs. Apple is encouraging cross-platform SSOs. Apple allows on iOS devices, sign in with Google, sign in with Microsoft, sign in with LinkedIn, sign in with Amazon. All the SSOs are permitted on iOS with the only condition that if a developer chooses to use an SSO, it must also offer sign in with Apple as an alternative. Judge Chen, then the question is, how does this, and by the way, Judge Cunningham, Blix has no SSO, has never developed one since this complaint was filed in 2018, has taken no steps to develop one. This goes to standing as well as to injury. And Apple has taken no steps to interfere with Blue Mail or Messaging Bridge on iOS ever, with the exception of a six-week period where there was a debate whether the sign-in with Apple requirement applied to Blue Mail or not, a debate that was decided in Blue Mail's favor. Today, if you download Blue Mail, you will find that they have sign-in with Google, and they do not have sign-in with Apple. They have never been required to use sign-in with Apple. They are not using it today.
But there was a debate about whether they needed to also offer a sign-in with Apple.
That's correct, Your Honor. And there was a debate, and there's an exception for email clients. And the fifth exception in Guideline 4.8 was determined to apply to Blue Mail. That's been resolved. It's not an antitrust claim. That's simply a routine developer dispute over the application of the guidelines. We're here in an antitrust case.
Was there a period of time where they, I understand that they're not now being required to utilize SIWA, was there a time where they were, where they did have to include it if they wanted another SSO?
There was a period of time where an update was held up as the parties debated whether or not sign-in with Apple would be required. To my understanding, Blix never implemented sign-in with Apple, and today the update has been implemented. Blue Mail remains available.
But couldn't their antitrust injury include at that point being held off of the platform during the time when Apple was trying to impose, even though they ultimately decided not to impose that requirement on them?
To be clear, Chief Judge Miller, they were on the platform. This was an update to the existing app. It was not, the app was on the iOS app platform. It has never been taken off. This was simply a question as to whether they could update. And when updates are submitted for review, Apple applies the current guidelines to make sure that the entire app is in compliance. this dispute happened and was resolved in the ordinary course. The app was never taken off. Consumers were never disentitled or disabled. The developer was never disadvantaged. It simply was a routine disagreement about the application of the guidelines that Blix won. And again, that was 2 years ago. It was a period of 6 weeks. And it's not an anti-competitive injury. Judge Chen, you asked my friend how we get from sign-in with Apple, which is a single sign-on service, to the operating system market. The theory is middleware, as was acknowledged. And I have to reiterate, Blix has no middleware. If Messaging Bridge is the middleware, then Apple has not interfered with it in any way. If it is some hypothetical single sign-on that would use Messaging Bridge, Blix has not developed it. No other developer has developed it. No concrete steps have been taken towards its development. And therefore, there is no competition, no potential competition, no nascent competition under the Third Circuit's standing doctrines. So there's a disconnect here.
What about the argument that Apple's somehow altered the arc of the use of single sign-on by forcing all apps to include sign-in with Apple as an option? And, you know, because we're living inside an Apple ecosystem, they are sort of gaming the system by entrenching themselves in an Apple-centric way for users to use Apple's single sign-on system.
Sure.
And then by doing so, you've further entrenched Apple users into the Apple world, making it that much less likely that they're going to switch over into a new, different operating system. I think there's two theories. One is there will be a brand new operating system rival getting created thanks to these new sign-ons, single sign-ons. But then there's this other one of, I think, is more of an entrenchment thing, making it harder and harder and less likely that anyone would ever entertain the idea of using a rival operating system.
So I need to answer that in two steps, Judge Chen. The first is that Apple's initial conduct in the single sign-on market, and there's still a disconnect to the mobile operating system market, but let's talk about single sign-on entrenchment. The first step is that it's undisputed that Apple has been inclusionary. Apple allows on the iOS platform all single sign-ons, including those offered by its operating system competitor Android, non-operating system companies.
Is it possible that's too superficial of a way of looking at the situation when we know we're already living inside of this Apple playing field? And then because there's this uneven playing field of the Apple ecosystem, by forcing everyone to always offer an Apple option, that just sort of bends the arc of what people are likely to do, which is to choose the Apple one that Apple is forced on all app developers to make available.
So we need to answer this from two sides. The consumer side of the platform, Blix disavowed in the district court, and the district court found that there is no coercion, no forcing on the consumer side. So consumers have an option. In fact, consumers, because of this policy, have more options. That's pro-competitive, giving consumers more choices. If any single sign-on is offered, there are more of them. And that's out of the case. So the consumer side of the platform, there's no allegations of anti-competitive conduct, which goes to Chief Judge Moore's lock-in point, which I'd like to come back to. On the developer side of the platform, as Judge Stark explained at Appendix 26, implementation of sign-in with Apple is entirely voluntary. You know, many apps, most apps probably, don't use any single sign-on. They use either no authentication method or a app-specific authentication method. It's only where those developers choose to use a single sign-on that the equal footing doctrine kicks in, right? That sign-in with Apple is offered alongside the others.
Do you know how many apps do that?
Today, I don't know, Your Honor. It's an increasing number. This is a novel and nascent market. When this complaint was filed, single sign-ons were barely known. It is increasing over time. These are big players, as I said, Google, Amazon, Microsoft, LinkedIn, Facebook.
What if, hypothetically, we were to find that the district court had a misunderstanding of the Sherlocking allegation vis-a-vis the patent infringement allegation, and incorrectly conflated the two, and then
we found, we concluded that the district court's finding of no anti-competitive harmful actions was not really complete and correct because the analysis wasn't done properly. There's this other element of, okay, well, does any of this anti-competitive harm that's been alleged connect back to protecting a monopoly? That analysis didn't really happen either at the district court level, and so would this whole thing need to be remanded back for a second look?
So if I could take those in reverse order, Judge Chen, the second question, is there any connection between the allegations of shenanigans, to use the court's word, and exclusionary conduct in the mobile operating system market, which is this plaintiff's obligation? Having defined the relevant market, they have to show exclusionary conduct in that market. That's the Intergraph case, that's the Broadcom case, that's the Trinco case from the Supreme Court, and they have not. And the Judge Stark did address this at Appendix 20, excuse me, at Appendix 26, that there was no allegation connecting it. And in fact, if you look at the complaint, they have a section called Harm to Competition. It's paragraphs 277 to 318. And that entire section, there's only one paragraph, 282, that even refers to the mobile operating system market. And it's simply the entirely conclusory statement that competition in that market was harmed. There's no connection.
So as to just to be clear, are you saying that the arguments we're hearing today as to the harm to the monopoly or the preservation of the monopoly were all waived arguments, but they weren't made below?
Your Honor, they have been making arguments that aren't supported by the allegations in their complaint. And you remember, they've had three opportunities to replead. They've had five sets of counsel. They've had different markets, different conduct, different theories. They've changed every time. This most recent one, they never synced up any allegation of exclusionary conduct in their newly minted mobile operating system market. And Judge Stark said, and this is a quote, Blix does not explain how Apple's requirement to offer sign-in with Apple restricts competition in the mobile operating system market. That's at Appendix 25 and 26. On appeal, they don't take on that statement. They don't explain why it's wrong. They don't point to anything in the complaint that has non-conclusory allegations of that. We have lots of attorney argument and changing theories about middleware and flattening and so forth, but not concrete, specific, factual allegations from which a finder of fact could find exclusionary conduct in that market. And we know, of course, from the Twombly case, which was an antitrust case, that you can't just plead the elements of an antitrust claim. You have to show facts. You have to plead facts that would allow a finder of fact to actually conclude that there was one. As to the Sherlocking...
What about JA536 in terms of the second amended complaint, the operative complaint? Do paragraphs 147, 149, 150, do those paragraphs do more of the link-up that you're saying is lacking in what Blix has been describing to us?
So, Your Honor, those paragraphs are the theory. They are not allegations of facts. They are talking about hypothetical SSOs that this plaintiff has never developed. 147, for example, has an example, a hypothetical of a product that does not exist. This plaintiff may wish to create one, but they haven't. And we don't have antitrust cases based on vaporware, right? We don't have antitrust cases based on hypothetical products that nobody's developed. And there's no allegation of misconduct or conduct of any sort by Apple precluding the development of the product described in paragraph 147. As to paragraph 149, it goes to the switching cost question that Chief Judge Moore asked earlier. Switching costs are not monopoly maintenance. In other words, there is no doctrine of our law that says a brand may not encourage consumer loyalty. In fact, our law encourages consumer loyalty. If you look at soft drinks or food or computers or anything else, brands are there. Trademarks are there to identify the brands. The brands' own products are there to encourage consumers to use them. And absent conduct that is exclusionary, and I have to keep coming back to this word because this is what the Supreme Court and this court and the Third Circuit have told us is the standard, absent conduct that's exclusionary, encouraging continued participation in the ecosystem is entirely lawful.
But the exclusionary conduct that they allege in the complaint is that they're required, if they have any SSO, to include SIWA, and that's the exclusionary conduct.
And Your Honor, there's two problems with that. One, it is factually false. They are not required.
That's a Rule 11 problem, though. That's not something I can dispute with you. If the complaint alleges it at the 12b6 stage, what am I supposed to do?
Your Honor, the complaint actually alleges, does never alleges that Blix is required to use sign-in with Apple. The brief in this court says that. The complaint does not. There is a disconnect, as I said to Judge Chen, between the attorney arguments and the allegations of the complaint. Blix is not, and you can ask my friend, Blix is not required to use sign-in with Apple, and today does not use sign-in with Apple. So yes, that is one question. But Chief Judge Moore, let's spot the hypothetical. If they were, and some developers are, if they choose to use any single sign-on service, then they must offer sign-in with Apple as an alternative. That's not an exclusionary requirement. That's an inclusionary requirement. That is requiring an additional consumer choice to be provided because, of course, Apple, as the platform operator, has to protect both the developer side of the platform and the consumer side of the platform. And if a developer comes in with sign-in with Google or sign-in with Microsoft, the consumers on the other side of the platform are largely loyal Apple consumers, and they would like to see sign-in with Apple. They don't have to use it. They're entitled to pick Google or Microsoft if they want, if the developer offers it. But Apple, to protect its own consumers and its platform, has the sign-in with Apple requirement as an alternative. And there's no antitrust doctrine that offering an additional choice to both developers and consumers is exclusionary or anti-competitive.
You're not offering the choice to developers if you require them to include it.
Well, Your Honor, we're
They're
not
alleging
no developer is required to include it. Most developers do not use single sign-on at all. Only if they choose to use some single sign-on, and then it's their option as to how many, they can have one or ten, they have to include Apple as among the list of options. Again, it's not exclusionary, it's inclusionary.
That's not the way the developer would see it, right? The developer is being forced to devote some portion of its web page and to have internal software engineers incorporate the Apple SIWA into its platform. Isn't that the way the developer would see it?
Well, you asked the latter.
You may say it's an advantage to them to have the ability to have their customers access through us. But if they don't see it that way, that doesn't seem like inclusionary. It seems like exclusionary.
Well, let's take Blix for example. If they were required, they say in the complaint, at paragraph 252, that they have chosen to use sign-in with Google and sign-in with Microsoft. So they have offered single sign-ons that give their customers over to other platforms. What they don't want to do is include Apple, even though they're accessing iOS and the Apple platform and the Apple customer base. There's no engineering involved. Signing with Apple is an API provided by Apple as part of the license agreement that all
is
of us are part of.
Is it your view that if they include sign-on with Google or sign-on with Facebook, that they must include sign-on with Apple?
Absolutely, Your Honor. That is the requirement.
Well, but that's exactly what they say is intended to extend the monopoly power in the operating system.
And yes, that is the theory that they have tried to articulate. And we come back to the disconnect. There is no antitrust doctrine by which you could get to, let's say every developer were required to include sign-in with Apple. It's an extreme hypothetical. It doesn't exist today, but just think about it. How would that extend the monopoly in the operating system? The only theory that's been offered is through middleware. Single sign-ons are not middleware. By any definition, they are not middleware. They are simply conveniences for the user. There's no user compulsion alleged in this case. So it's only on the developer side. And the developers, if they choose to use the platform, they have to give up some of the requirements to go with it. That's not anti-competitive. That's part of the conditions on the license, which is hundreds of pages long and has all kinds of things in it. And so it's simply an additional option for consumers and developers that they're allowed to offer other developers, not this developer, by the way. To reiterate, this developer doesn't use sign-in with Apple at all and is not required to. Which brings me to the question of standing, actually brings me to my red light, unless the court has.
I do want to ask about standing, though. So just following up on Judge Chin's question regarding potential areas that the district court did not address in its opinion, he talked a little bit about the interplay between Sherlock and patent infringement. And the question I have for you is, if we were to choose to vacate and remand, would it be possible for the district court to address standing in the first instance? Does this court, in your view, need to address standing? What's your take?
So if I could answer that in two steps, Judge Cunningham.
Yes.
As to the Sherlocking question, Appendix 560, paragraph 249, the plaintiff alleges
that Apple is free to offer sign-in with Apple so long as we don't infringe on Blix's intellectual property. That does away with the Sherlocking claim. Second, as to antitrust standing. Antitrust standing is a non-Article III prudential standing doctrine, so it can be, you know, it's not required to be addressed at the outset of the case. It can be and often is addressed by appellate courts in the first instance. We submitted the Host International case from the Third Circuit recently that shows how it can be decided on the pleadings. The Third Circuit law is very clear on standing. If you are not a competitor or a consumer in the relevant market, you cannot sue. And Blix is not a competitor or a consumer in the market for mobile operating systems. It doesn't offer a mobile operating system, and it disavowed being a consumer of a mobile operating system.
There's the inextricably intertwined theory, though.
There is the inextricably intertwined exception, which is very narrow, as the court knows, from the McCready and Hanover Realty case, in which case the injury to the plaintiff has to be the very means by which the defendant carries out its illegal, allegedly illegal ends. That's the standard for inextricably intertwined. There is no injury to this plaintiff. There is no injury to this plaintiff. This plaintiff is not required to use sign-in with Apple. Therefore, the injury to the plaintiff is zero. It cannot be the means by which Apple has carried out the so-called monopoly maintenance. I mean, the whole thing is a house of cards. We agreed for purposes of the motion to dismiss to monopoly power in the relevant market, so, you know, for purposes of argument. It then became the plaintiff's burden to show injury. Exclusionary conduct, we haven't talked about the tying claim, but it has additional problems there, in that market. And the real problem with this case, as Judge Stark recognized after giving, you know, good counsel multiple chances to amend, is there's simply nothing to link up the bits and bytes of complaints about Apple's Blix-specific conduct with any theory, any cognizable theory of antitrust injury or exclusionary conduct or tying in the relevant market, the mobile operating systems market.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you,
Mr. Perry. We gave Mr. Perry 5 extra minutes, so we'll give you 5 minutes as well for rebuttal.
The Blue Mail app, it's not required by Apple for it to include sign-in with Apple. Is that right?
The answer to that question is, Judge, as long as Blix remains just a messaging, an email client.
So for now, the answer is yes.
For now, the answer is yes.
Is it also
yes.
True that Blix doesn't offer a single sign-on service?
The answer is yes, and Your Honor, I'd refer
Has
the court...
Has it ever offered a single sign-on service?
The answer is no, asterisk. Your Honor, I would ask the court to take a look at paragraphs 177 through 184. The messaging bridge is deployable as a single sign-on and would be a revenue-producing source for Blix, but they have not been able to launch it. That's the sand in the gears allegations and the leg up that Siwa has, that sign in with Apple has got.
You're saying that they have the capacity to create a single sign on, but they haven't yet created a single sign on?
I'm saying they've essentially got the product built and have not been able to put it out in the marketplace for that reason. Because at the time when they would have needed to launch to be commercially viable, Apple made sure that their limited resources were taken up with other things by attacking their already on the market product, their mail app, mail client.
Which paragraph is this?
So I referred the court to 177, the deploying the messaging bridge is a revenue source, and the sand in the gears section, which details the conduct that kept Blix off balance.
I just want to know the statement of, we don't have an SSO because Apple stopped us from being able to launch an SSO.
Paragraph 196.
Thank you, Your Honor. 196 and 225, that the sand in the gear shifted Blix's focus at a critical time.
Did you put it in the market in Android?
No. Android has been pushed to the competitor fringe, and the answer to that is, Your Honor, no.
Do you have a better paragraph than 196?
The sand in the gears stopped them from being able to move at the critical time is at 225.
225, okay.
What is your response on the standing issue?
Your Honor, my friend refers to the Third Circuit exception for inextricably intertwined as very narrow, but I think it falls fairly within what 3201 Hanover contemplates, right? The preventing this specific technology from getting a foothold in the SSO market in the way that, to refer back to Microsoft, that Microsoft needed to prevent the widespread adoption of a cross-platform Java or of Netscape. They didn't have to wipe it out entirely, but they had to prevent it from becoming widely used, right? By preventing this technology from being widely used as a single sign-on that would disintermediate Apple and foster cross-platform, essentially so you could just port all your relationships when you switched from Apple to either a current or future other operating system. That the inextricable means by which they did that was to stuff Blix when it tried to get this into the market. That's the allegation. And we do plead that it's a revenue-producing technology that they haven't been able to get out the door.
Anything further, counsel?
Nothing further, Your Honor.
Okay, we thank both counsel. The case is taken under submission.
Thank you for your time.